and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. If you missed the first hour, you missed a good one. So that was on the history of the Vietnam War, kind of a view of history that we don't typically get. So I hope you, I hope you do catch that. You can find that at wethepeopleradio.us. All the archives there are free, and just MP3 files. You can listen to them online. You can download them or do whatever you like with them. We are not particular about that. We do the show to benefit the public and do educational things, you know. So my name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
Well, Bill, what do you have for us today?
Well, let me tell you, Aaron. Our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer.
Got that out of our system.
Yeah. Pape will pretty much take care of you with anything regarding John Deere products. They can get everything from bicycles to big tractors. Says John Deere, give them a call. They'll get you fixed up. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake, right between Oasis and I just forgot the other street, Pine Grove. Exits. So go up and see them, or you can give them a call. Their phone number is 226-9226, or you can catch them online at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da!
Yeah.
Yeah, so let's see. Sure, easy for me to say.
Sure.
Aaron with one eye. Yes, so our second hour, we have Ambassador Francis Rooney, former Ambassador Francis Rooney. But I think once you're an ambassador, you're always an ambassador. And he was a congressman, too. But then you're not always a congressman. So, I don't know. I think the ambassador title sticks. It's got, I think people like ambassadors more than they like members of Congress. So, I don't know if it's like, you know, one starts with A, one starts with C, go with the better letter.
All they want to do is yell at you when you're a congressman.
Apparently. I mean, yeah. Probably get sick of that. So let's see. He's been on with us a bunch of times. I really should link all of his shows because we chat with him about some interesting stuff. He wrote a book called The Global Vatican, and super interesting book. And he is an American politician. I guess you should be American if you're going to be a politician in our country. And a diplomat who was the U.S. representative for Florida's 19th congressional district from 2017 to 2021 during the interesting time. In the Republican caucus, he served as a United States ambassador to the Holy See under George W. Bush from 2005 to 2008. That is worthy of discussion, and he's the chairman of Rooney Holdings. The one thing that we've never talked to him about, though, he serves as a member of the advisory board of the Panama Canal Authority, and he's a member of the Council of American Ambassadors, also interesting, but he's a trustee of the Center for Study of the Presidency in Congress. You know, that seems like something we should know more about. He's a graduate of Georgetown and Georgetown University Law Center, also has honorary degrees from Notre Dame and the University of Dallas.
Hmm.
Ta-da!
Yeah, there you go.
So
he's been around.
He has been around.
Yeah.
And hanging out in Florida. You still hanging out in Florida, Ambassador? Because it's good to call you Ambassador, but you can't call people former congressmen, right? That's kind of weird.
You know, I think congressman's kind of a pejorative term right now.
I know. That's what I was saying. Like, you know, I think being an ambassador, it's like that has a little more rank.
A little more wild factor.
Or maybe it's less rank. I don't know. depends on how you look at it. Okay, so we didn't have, we did have, you posted your opinion contribution here in The Hill, Midterms 2022, Lessons Learned in the Path Forward. So we probably ought to hit that a little bit. And I'm hoping that you'll tell us a little bit about the Center for Study of the Presidency in Congress and maybe what you guys are looking at for the, I don't know, the future as is informed by the past, I suppose.
Sure.
All right, so fire away. You just take us wherever you want to go.
The Center for the Study of the Presidency in Congress. I'm not a trustee anymore. I got off when I ran for Congress.
Ah.
It was founded by David Abshire, who was the ambassador to NATO under Reagan and came back to help manage the Iran-Contra controversy for Reagan.
Oh.
And if, if, they hadn't done such a masterful job, who knows what would have happened to Reagan, because the Democrats were out for him, and there was some pretty conflicting evidence about using money to Iranian money to arm Contras in Nicaragua and stuff. But David Abshire did a masterful job of protecting the president.
Nice. And that's why it was formed?
Well, it was a think tank in New York, and Dave got a hold of it and moved it to D.C., and so they do the usual think tank stuff. They do studies about, you know, we did a lot of studies about Afghanistan and Iraq in the day. They do studies about military preparedness, economic stuff, small business stuff. There are several State Department people that are on the board, several corporate people, Steve Schwarzman, et cetera, that are on the board. And it's a nice cross-section of leadership. Mike Rogers, you know, used to be head of the Intel Committee in the Congress. He's on the board. A good group.
Nice. And so do they put out information? Is it basically inside stuff that they, you know, that they help people in office with, or is it stuff that's available to the public?
Yeah, all these think tanks put out information to try to help guide public opinion and policy for the elected officials, for corporate leaders, for anybody that wants to read it and have their view of different subjects.
Hmm.
And they can inform opinions that way.
Well, and it kind of makes sense. I mean, you wouldn't want to have all this brain trust and then just let it. But a lot of times it's formed for a particular thing and you're informing a particular audience.
Well, let's face it, when people get elected to Congress, they're not experts in everything. I mean, I'm sure they have a particular specialty, but in most cases, they have a lot to learn. They have a lot to learn.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of those members of Congress aren't experts in anything.
Well, I didn't want to go there.
Hey, that's not what George Santos says.
Well, he's an expert in everything that's fraudulent.
He's an expert in things that we haven't even thought of yet. That's just so bizarre. I know. Our first hour was.
How did the people of that district elect that fraud?
Yeah,
I mean,
it's amazing.
Are they all brain dead up there?
Well, you know, it's called not doing your homework, yeah. I guess.
Well,
you know, sometimes.
And continue to support him. I mean, after the fact, it's amazing.
Well, they wanted Congress itself to get rid of him, but that's not their job. I mean, that's not that they don't get to unseat people that other people have elected. But yeah, I don't know.
Well, the Republicans were kind of conflicted because they don't want to lose the Republican seat. It's almost a fluke that a Republican won't want it anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, there is that.
Majority.
Well, it's very it's tricky. I always wonder what it'd be like to live in a district like that. You know, nobody really talks to the people who live there, and I don't know if they're maybe they're just chronically unavailable for interviews, but
well, it's true with a lot of the electeds.
I'd be curious what they were told.
How they get elected. I mean, could their constituents really be that out of touch to elect some of these people? But they get reelected, so, I mean.
Fetterman.
California is a great example. I mean.
Yeah, we've elected some doozies. And we're getting ready.
Well, McCormick would have beat Fetterman hands down had Trump not got in there and pushed that Haas guy.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. Trump has cost us so many Republican seats, several times in Georgia and now in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, and it's interesting because that was kind of the first line, that was the opening salvo in your op-ed. Now that the midterms are over, it's time for the Republican Party to come to terms with two key concepts. First, the narrative of this is Donald Trump's party should be laid to rest, and second, the Americans want representatives in office that will be pragmatic and deliver results and not a bunch of empty rhetoric. So, all crazy people and liars aside, I do think that is something that people really want. It's like, please go there and do real things that actually help me.
Yeah, and as a party, you know, we've got to have something to sell. We can't sell these dumb candidates like Trump put in there. In the House, there are several House districts where there were crazy Trump candidates that had no chance of winning and, in fact, did not win.
Yeah.
We should have had a 10-15 seat majority.
And why do you, I mean, everybody's got their opinions. So you wrote an op-ed, you've got opinions. So why do you think that is? Why do you think that I mean,
we fell so short of
yeah. Well, I mean, why do you think he would push people that they didn't think would really be able to win?
Because Trump doesn't care if they win. Trump cares if they agree with him.
Well, I guess I wouldn't.
He said that.
Yeah, that's true.
He doesn't look out for anybody but him.
Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, if he's going to run again, how does that serve his interest?
Well, I guess it would serve him better if the people had won. But now that they've lost, I don't think it helps him at all.
Right.
I think his star is fading right now.
Well, he certainly hasn't been really campaigning as hard as he did the first time around, and maybe he's just holding back until it gets a little closer to the election. But he still has a fairly large following. I mean, when you look at the polls, I mean, he's still way up there in the polls, and I just wonder if anybody with any substance will be able to stand a chance to run against him.
Well, he is up there in the polls, and he's not. He is there in the polls with his hardcore group, and that's actually declined a little bit. But I don't think he can. It's kind of like a hard deck. I don't think he can get above it, mm-hmm. and that's the problem. So he did fine against a scoundrel like Hillary Clinton. But you get this Biden guy out there that people say, well, you know, I don't think we really realized how senile he was. But, you know, he wasn't as objectionable as Hillary Clinton. And I think a lot of people went for him that would have gone for Trump the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the first time Trump had no record, and now he does,
mm-hmm.
including January 6th.
Yeah, and now that's all coming out for a revisit. So, by way of opinion, you think that the footage, the Capitol footage, should have come out a long time ago, or waited?
Yeah, I don't know why they should get it all out there right away.
Yeah, that never made sense to me either. Other than it didn't really, I mean, if you can't cherry pick things and use them, if everybody's going to look at everything, that kind of makes it a little harder. Do you think they would?
I think the people should see it all. See it all. See, they can make their own judgments.
Sure.
Well, that's the way it used to be, but it seems like we've become so divided anymore that nobody trusts either side with the information that comes out. So I think the only right way to do it, and like say the way it's always been done, is you put all your cards on the table and then let the American people decide. And
exactly.
That just hasn't been done these last few years from both sides. I mean, it's everything is skewed, and I think it's going to be a long road for the American people to get back to a point where they can trust their government. And the media, I think, is even got a longer road to hoe there. Their credibility is completely shot.
They've had a little prevarication problem as well.
Yeah.
Well, the media's gotten so partisan. You know, we're so far away from journalism.
Oh, yeah.
It's advocacy. It's traditional partisan advocacy on the part of our media.
Yeah.
And that's really not what we expect from them.
No, it's not. Everything is opinion and entertainment now. It's not news anymore. It's you like you say, you cherry pick the facts that work for your side, and then push your agenda.
Yeah. And that's created this huge increase in partisanship. I think it's augmented the partisanship that's probably there anyway.
Yeah.
You know, you combine that with all these districts that are R plus 12 or 15 or D plus 12 or 15, where the election's decided in the primary, combine partisan media with that, you've got kind of a perfect storm.
Yeah. Well, and that's the... I don't know. And that's the drama that we're headed into. I really am looking to kind of pick your brain on where you think we're headed, because it seems like a long way out to 2024, but it really isn't, especially in...
No, it's going to come pretty fast.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have to declare in, like, September, October. Our guest is former Ambassador Francis Rooney, and we're going to have to come back in a couple of minutes here. Got to take a little break. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Much to my surprise, when I opened my eyes, I was a victim of the Great Compromise.
And that is where we find ourselves. So, all right. You have a lot of people who are who find it to be heresy that you would say anything against Donald Trump. So... You can't. You're not allowed to do that. But we do have a lot of people who are consider themselves Republicans who have either were never in his camp or have left his camp, and still consider themselves Republicans. So demonizing them and telling them they're not good enough Republicans doesn't seem like a very winning strategy. Compromise seems to be a dirty word. In your article, you talk about DeSantis and Youngkin winning over majorities in the Republican base, but also pulling in independents and some Democrats. So, well, go there. Like, where do you see that going? I mean, do you think it just becomes two Republican camps, and that way we never get anywhere?
No, I'm going to be optimistic that we will get somebody running, whether it's DeSantis or Glenn Youngkin or who, that can bridge the gap and will not be repugnant to more traditional, middle-of-the-road, pro-business Republicans, but will also be able to excite the base. And that's kind of the delicate tightrope that our candidates need to walk.
Yeah, it definitely is. So what happens... you know, it's still kind of up in the air whether DeSantis is going to run. I think he'd make a great candidate. But what happens if Trump gets the nomination? At that point, do you think the party has a chance of ever bringing the Senate and the House back into
control? I mean, does everybody just get on board and go, okay, well, wasn't our choice, but he's our candidate? And
well, that's what's happened in the last couple of elections. It's not... who you want to see? It's hold your nose and vote for the guy that we've nominated.
And that worked against Hillary Clinton because she was so odious, highest negatives of any Republican or any candidate ever.
Yeah,
but it might not work against anybody else. It didn't work against Biden.
No,
and there's a limit, I think, to what Trump can get people to do. If there's any kind of alternative,
right? Yeah, that's going to be a tough decision. I mean, if we don't get a candidate in there that everybody can rally around, I think we're going to be in for another 4 years of disaster. And I think people need to realize that we really do need a change, and we got a change with Trump. And you know, I don't agree with a lot of the things he said and a lot of the way he did
it. It was just the way he did it, but his policy. I mean, where are you with his policy for the most part? Like, how about foreign policy?
Oh yeah, I think foreign policy. I'm a little more conflicted about him, but in the domestic stuff, it was such low hanging fruit any Republican would have done the same stuff, getting rid of all that Obama anti-business stuff that we worked on in the first 2 years I was up there. It was a no-brainer.
Right. And it had a big impact on the economy, on jobs, on a lot of stuff.
It did, but unfortunately, because of the 60-vote thing in the Senate, it couldn't be made into law.
Right.
It was all by executive order.
Yep.
The House would pass it, but the Senate wouldn't bring it up. So Trump would do an executive order, which makes it replaceable.
Yep.
And now Biden's doing all that.
Yeah, and we're
kind of like a banana republic. We swing each way.
Well, and we've talked about that a bunch of times, that when you do the executive orders, it's like you've written fake laws in pencil, and the next guy shows up with a giant eraser, and away it goes.
Mm-hmm.
So the other thing we've talked about before is that the executive order thing has become the de facto legislative tool for presidents who can't get Congress to go along with whatever it is they want on both sides.
Yeah.
So it would seem that, I guess that's where the the Center for the Presidency that you were part of, I was curious, have they ever taken up the idea that potentially, like, Congress needs to sue the executive branch so that it goes over to the Supreme Court and they have to figure out constitutionally what they can do with executive order and what they can't, and put limits on that?
Well, I think they've already got that, don't they?
Not really, no.
Yeah, at times the center's done some work on that, but getting Congress to do anything is like pulling teeth.
Well, at any given time, on a deal like that, the biggest problem is, at any given time, their person is running the executive branch, and so they don't want to upset the apple cart for what they see as winning. The bad part is then the giant eraser comes, and then the other guy's doing the winning, kind of. But it's temporary. So the swings seem to be getting more more pronounced.
Yeah, like I say, I don't think we're much different than El Salvador, okay? You get one guy in, he does what he wants to do. You get another guy in, he does what he wants to do. Swings back and forth. It's yin and yang.
So,
and none of them in the executive branch seem to pay attention to the law.
Right.
See, Biden joked that the tuition relief and the rent relief were probably unconstitutional, but he said, I'll do it anyway and fight it out in the courts. Now, what kind of leadership is that?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you know going into it, it's not gonna pass muster. It's ridiculous that they go ahead and do it anyway. And I think it's just PR. I think they're just doing it because,
oh sure,
you know,
it's all messaging. If in fact they were to tighten up the executive order, I don't know, process, abilities, whatever you want to call it, how much do you think that would help?
Well, if you could do it, it would help a lot.
Yeah, I would think so too.
Congress would just pass real laws,
yep,
that were specific and enforceable, and didn't leave all this leeway to the bureaucrats. That would go a long way to solve the problem, but they don't.
I think they have good laws. They have some good laws on the book, but when you have an executive branch and a Justice Department that are in cahoots and don't want to enforce the laws,
that's always interesting.
You know, that's a problem.
That is a problem, and that's a new problem. The things that we've heard out of the Obama and Biden administration about ignoring the rule of law, DACA, DAPA, rent relief, tuition loan relief, this is unprecedented.
Yeah.
In a country that's supposed to be a country of laws.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I there was one in our district here, because we have so many water issues and so much overreach with the agencies, Army Corps and Reclamation and all of them. And so there was an amendment put in that was actually signed under Obama, and the entire thing said that the Army Corps of Engineers could not regulate ongoing farming practices. It was one sentence long, fairly straightforward too, and that was added to something, whatever it was, passed. And when the Army Corps was called on it, they said that's not the way we read that. like we said, hey, you can't jack up the constituent over this. The guy actually is John Duarte, who is now a member of Congress, which is sort of funny. I'm sure he's going to explain that to them himself now, but it actually primed him to run. But yeah, when they went to him with it and said, here, what about this? They said, oh, that's not the way we read that.
And it stood.
That's the executive branch for you. They're power in themselves. We really are not the democracy we think we are. We are really in a dictatorship of the executive branch.
Yeah, so if well, since we're talking dictatorships, let's go monarchy. If you were king for a day, how would you fix it?
I would do a few things. I would, first of all, impose term limits. Nobody serves more than 12 years. Go back to your real world. Two, I would somehow or another, even if you make all districts square, I would get rid of highly partisan districts on both sides. At the end of the Clinton administration, 26% of congressional districts were considered highly partisan. Now it's 80, and I think that's part of our cancer. The elections are all decided in the primaries, which drive everybody out to the lunatic fringe. And the third thing I would do, if we could figure out how to do it, would be to reinsert the fairness doctrine, where media had to present both sides of political issues. Remember the fairness doctrine?
No.
Roger Ailes got it taken away under Reagan's administration.
What do you do about the entrenched bureaucrats that come along? You know, you have an election, you get new people, and then you have this bureaucracy in place that is pretty much ruling the roost. I mean, do you put term limits on that?
Well, there's one more thing I could throw in there that I didn't think about: the Chevron doctrine. The Chevron doctrine was a Supreme Court case years ago that decided that when there's vagueness in a law, the bureaucracy can interpret it. I'd get rid of that thing. I would say if there's vagueness in a law, it goes back to Congress to figure it out. It's their law,
mm-hmm.
not the bureaucrats.
Yeah, there's so much stuff in our society today that's being dictated by bureaucrats. You know, they can't impose a tax unless it's voted on, so they call it a fee, and then they get their money anyway. I mean, there's just little things like that that people are just fed up with, and we've got to make a change in some of these bureaucracies. And I think if we had the right person in the executive office or in the presidency, he could get rid of the heads of a lot of these departments and start making a change, but you still have all the people underneath them. And
they're there for 30 years. There's no term limit there.
And Trump was a classic example of that. He got killed by the bureaucracies.
The only answer is to write tight laws that don't leave a lot of room for them to have discretion so that they can be pinned back.
Mm-hmm.
But Congress doesn't like to do that, because it's hard to pass a really clear, tight law. It's easy to pass a vague one where different people can have different ideas of what it means.
But like, even, okay, so go back to my example. The Army Corps of Engineers cannot regulate ongoing farming practices, period, the end. This guy was planting wheat in a field that had wheat for over 100 years. Obviously ongoing farming. It was not a wetlands. But they decided that the little furrows where he was going to put seeds that had filled up with rain were now were now under waters of the U.S. and were a wetlands. And so, I mean, that was a really tight direction. There was no wiggle room to that. But then when they basically thumb their nose at you, as a member of Congress, what's your out there?
Well, part of the problem there is the waters of the U.S. law.
Yes.
And that was the most ridiculous thing in the world. I mean, Trump rescinded it by executive action, but we couldn't get it rescinded in a law. But to say that those furrows or some rain pond in your backyard, if it can leak out into a navigable waterway, is regulated by the Corps of Engineers, is kind of patently ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, kind of open to some abuse, maybe, just possibly.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, could have some problems. Yeah, it. Honestly, I do think that the executive order issue, if you could, you know, if they could tighten that up, do you think Congress can't tighten it up because it's a different branch of government, but the Supreme Court could certainly mitigate how that's being handled based on the constitutionality, couldn't they?
Yeah, they could. The Supreme Court could rule it unconstitutional, and then maybe the Congress could pass a better law.
Yeah, so how do you get there from here, like the way we're situated now?
Right now, the only good thing that's happened in the whole government is the Supreme Court.
Yeah, true. So on a deal like that, how do you get it there?
The Supreme Court rules it unconstitutional, and maybe the Republican House passes a better law. And it sits there, and someday maybe we get a Senate that can also do it. I don't know. But this Senate's not going to do anything.
Mm-hmm. No. No, and that's, I don't know, maybe the good thing and the bad thing. They got a lot of bad ideas. We've got a lot of good ideas coming out of the House at the moment, but, yeah, now they're going to be hamstrung. And it was supposed to be difficult. I get that. The setup was such that, you know, we weren't going to be, you know, legislating like a house on fire, because obviously every time we pass laws, our liberty slips a little bit for the most part.
But, yeah, it's slipping a lot lately.
Yeah. Yeah, there are times when it slips more than other times. Got to take a really quick break, but when we come back, let's go back to the unpleasantness. And I want to see where you think that the Trump influence on 2024, what, you know, I mean, obviously, nobody has a crystal ball that I know of, but I'd be curious to see where you see that influence and how it can be mitigated going forward. So our discussion is with Ambassador Francis Rooney, former Ambassador Francis Rooney, and you're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
It's a treacherous game.
A sucker for these lies, but I know when an angel is the devil in disguise. This is war. This is war.
I can't do everything, but I can try. And as I roll along, I begin to find things aren't always just what they seem. I wanna turn the whole thing upside down. I'll find the things they say just can't be found. I'll share this love I'll find with everyone. We'll sing.
Well, the upside down part was right, but I think the love thing was a little off track.
Reminds me of my childhood, because I watched Curious George, and all of the music on Curious George was Jack Johnson. So I'm like, it's like I'm 6 years old.
Well, it's only fitting that we would be playing Curious George songs when we're talking about Congress. That kind of fits, actually. I didn't even know that either. Okay, so where do you think we're going to go with this, you know, Trump's great, Trump's horrible thing that we have?
I'm hopeful that we're going to have a couple of strong candidates like Governor DeSantis, Governor Youngkin, Governor Abbott, Governor Neim, who are going to get out, and Ambassador Haley. They're going to get out there and start campaigning and show the American people that there's an alternative to Trump in the Republican side of things.
And so that being the case, I agree 100%. Who do you think they'd have to run against? I mean, I don't think Biden's going to run again. I can't imagine that people would sit still for another 4 years of this. But who knows? Crazier things have happened.
The only way they will if they can't figure out how to get rid of Kamala Harris.
Yeah. Yeah, can you imagine? Well, and they're thinking
nobody
about...
Nobody likes her. The Democrats don't like her any more than we do.
Right.
No, and they never did.
So who do you think would be a good candidate on the Democrat side? I mean, as far as somebody we would have to be concerned about if Trump doesn't get the nomination?
Oh, that's a good question, because they've become so polar on the extremes. Biden appealed because he had a history of being a moderate, even though he hasn't acted that way since he got elected. I don't know what moderate Democrats there might be. I don't know any moderate Democrats.
Are there
any moderate Democrats there?
No, not really.
I don't.
But, I mean, they keep talking about, like, Gavin Newsom. Okay, so you live in Florida.
He's not about moderate Democrat.
No.
Definitely not.
No,
moderate.
But they keep talking about running him. Okay, even in Florida, you know the crazy stuff he's doing, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
it's
a lunatic
asylum out there.
I know.
Oh, we see it and hear it every day. It's amazing.
The only thing that makes California look good is Oregon.
Yeah, and they're trying to split part of their state off and give it to Idaho.
Okay, you want to hear something funny? I was talking to a guy yesterday who moved to the Brookings area, so the coast of Oregon, out of California. And people in Oregon are blaming all their problems on California. They wouldn't have all these problems if California wasn't doing whatever. And I'm laughing. I'm like... That's
always been their line, though. I mean, California has always been their big problem, their big influence, but they've got their own problems.
Yeah, I know. They legalized mushrooms, for God's sake. What could go wrong?
Last week, the Wall Street Journal had an article and a Pareto chart graphing the reduction or elimination of cash bail and the increase in crime. Now, why do you need to even make a chart about that? It's obvious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the chart data backs it up. It's all in Oregon and California.
Yeah. And you know the thing that's interesting is we have so many people in California. So the danger is with all of this is that it all seems hopeless. It all seems like it's never getting fixed. It's all right. And then people just say, well, it doesn't matter. So there's voter fraud. There's this. There's that. The candidates aren't great. I don't know who to believe. Everybody lies to me. The media is bad. I'm not going to vote.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous.
So okay, what would be, if you had 100 of them sitting in front of you who all gave you that thing and they're like, okay, so convince me otherwise, what would be your elevator speech on that one?
Well, I would say if you want to have a voice, you got to vote. And it's better if you have a voice that you speak up and do other things than just vote. And you have to recruit candidates who don't agree with all these wackos. And they need to be funded so they can get on the air and make their point.
Yeah. Yeah, and people want to believe that you don't need to finance any of this, but I don't know, like in a state like California and Florida and places that are big and have a lot of geography, it takes a tremendous amount to reach people. You can't physically go to everybody's house, but
large media markets, it's very expensive.
It's super expensive. Yep, and especially in our rural areas, a lot of our media has kind of gone away. You no longer have the regular local newspaper. It all comes out of St. Louis or Chicago or whatever.
Dallas, Fort Worth.
But people aren't taking the paper. That's the thing. Like in our small communities, those papers that have been taken over by Scripps and whatnot. People aren't subscribing because it doesn't have any local news in it. So
we have that here.
Now you can't reach them.
That here in Naples, if you want to find out what's going on in Atlanta or Orlando, just read the Naples paper.
Yeah.
Because Gannett has consolidated all their back office, like in Tampa or somewhere, and they print every paper that they own in Florida, which is a lot, in one place, and then email the files and they print it off. Locally,
Yeah, see, and so reaching people with that. The other thing, I don't know about other states, but I'm assuming if they have neighboring markets, like I know in Northern California, their television market comes out of Oregon, and in Eastern California, the northern part anyway, theirs comes out of Reno. So if you have candidates running in California, now they're having to buy media time in other states to get into their own district. It's expensive. I mean, to think that running for office, you can just do it on your, you know, your...
Yeah, you've got to have some major backing.
On your moxie.
In like, the millions.
Yeah, no. It's... So, all right, contributions to the big political machine, the local political machine, candidate direct.
Well, every candidate is going to have his campaign committee and his fundraising effort,
mm-hmm.
and that's the best way to do it, because then if you believe in the candidate, they're going to spend the money to get that guy elected,
right.
Not conflicted with ideology or pushing gun control or non-gun control or any other crazy thing that someone might want to spend their money pushing.
And then the races that are kind of crossovers where they cannot raise enough money in their own district to actually keep either hold the seat or take the seat, and they're relying on state GOP or the Republican National Committee. What have you had experience with them?
Oh, yeah. The National Republican Campaign Committee, they fund a lot of candidates. They did a good job this year. Unfortunately, the candidates weren't effective. They wasted a lot of money because these Trump guys weren't going to win.
Yeah, and in your estimation, why is that?
Why wouldn't they win?
Yeah, like so for people that are like, that's not true. What would be the case
Most
you would make?
Don't
to
believe that the election was stolen.
Okay,
and as long as these clowns keep going out and saying that, they're not going to move the ball down the field.
Yeah, they have to get off that and start a new strategy, like get some decent candidates that people can rally behind.
Yeah, I mean, how about debt and spending? How about immigration reform? How mm-hmm. about dealing responsibly with China? How about building ships? We spend half of the money that the entire world spends on defense, and we don't have enough money in our deal to build any ships?
Yeah.
It's all going to people and politically located bases and politically correct stuff. And we're going to be building ships and show those Chinese we mean business.
Yeah, so let's talk about foreign policy a little bit. You mentioned one of the striking comments you made in here that surprised the heck out of me was 77% of those ages 17 to 24 will not qualify for the military. What's that all about?
It's right in the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah. And why is that? Is it just drugs?
Because they're out of shape.
Just out of shape.
They're either too dumb, mentally infirm, or physically infirm, or some combination thereof.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's a huge problem right there. And when you look at what's happening as far as our budget goes, what we spend on our military versus what China and Russia and some of the other players, what they're investing in, and they're actually getting results. I mean, they're building, like you say, they're
China
building ships.
One third of what we spend, and they're actually building more ships.
Yeah, exactly.
Why is that? Well, they get to just tell their guys what to do. They don't really have to pay them that much, I guess.
Well, no, they also only do what's important, not what's politically needed. Look at all the bases we have around the country in stupid places that are not strategic.
Mm-hmm.
I think the last straw for me was after Hurricane Mike wiped out Tyndall Air Force Base in Panama City, Florida. We should have said, thank you, Hurricane Mike. Instead, they're going to spend billions to rebuild a base that is totally unnecessary, is too small to land anything important on it, and is 50 miles east of Eglin Field, one of the largest bases that we have. And that happens all the time around here. And how about Germany, where we have hundreds of thousands of troops, and we've had them there since World War II, and what have they done?
Right.
We must have the most highly polished equipment in the world over there.
Yeah, I've always wondered about the whole Germany thing. I mean, I understand, you know, we had a Cold War and we needed troops over there at one point, but that hasn't been the case for a long time. And our presence over there is huge, and it's got to be costing in the billions of dollars.
Hundreds of thousands of troops, and an awful lot of them in Italy, too, and there's nothing to fight.
Right.
At least in Spain, at Rota, we have some ships that can go down there and patrol the West African coast. But the ones in Germany and Italy, what are they going to do?
Yeah. Well, with this thing with Russia heating up, it might make a case for troops in Germany, but I don't know that they're equipped to really deter a Russian-type invasion, are they?
Well, and look at NATO. Where's NATO?
Right.
Belgium.
Yeah.
If you could reorganize things in an appropriate manner to put assets where they need to be close to the action, you'd move NATO to Poland or something.
Mm-hmm.
They'd have to give up the pastries. and you'd get rid of Ramstein in Germany and probably Aviano in Italy and move all those bases out to Hungary and Poland and Slovakia and all that kind of stuff, where right. The action is.
And do you think the NATO allies would be receptive to us moving huge bases like that onto different territories?
No.
I was going to say.
Germany loves the payroll. They've got a couple hundred thousand people over there eating, drinking, living, supporting the German economy.
But with regular paychecks.
Job?
Sure.
Yeah, that's not our job.
Right.
There's taxpayer money there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's.
And in Aviano in Italy.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a major issue there. As far as the NATO allies that don't have bases, do you think they would be receptive to putting bases? Because, I mean, shoot, we've run into, like, during the Iraq War, even France didn't want to be hosting anything or even let us fly over their territory during that conflict.
Yeah, that's because Chirac didn't want to do the war in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Turned out he was right.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think that Poland would be more than glad. Lithuania and some of those countries would be more than glad to have some U.S. troops over there.
Mm-hmm.
Might make them sleep better at night.
Yeah, I would think so. I would think so. But, no, I agree. I think we've got assets in areas that, I mean, if anything did happen, they would have to be relocated, and that's not an easy task. And you know, that alone would set back any kind of a defensive action, probably by months, just moving assets to where they're needed.
Yeah, I'm afraid that we have more of a political military than people might imagine.
Yeah, I think that would not be a hard sell. We are in the last 10 seconds, believe it or not. Ambassador Rennie, thanks for hanging out with us. We enjoy discussing things with you. Anytime we can. Thanks a lot.
Yep. Thank you very much.
It's been Ambassador Francis Rennie. You've been listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
We'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.